This Week in Enterprise Tech talks painful socks, big problems from little vulnerabilities, and multi-tenant Mac management. Twyatt on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 445, May 28th, 2021, Multi-Tenant Macs.
This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Bitwarden. Get the password manager that offers a robust and cost-effective solution that can drastically increase your chances of staying safe online. Get started with a free trial of a Teams or Enterprise plan, or try it for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. And by Audible. Audible is the leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Delve into your next title on Audible with Audible Plus. New members can try Audible Plus for 30 days. Download the Audible app and get started with a free trial at audible.com/twit or text twit to 500-500. And by Dean Backup and Replication V11. V11 has over 200 new features and a 4-in-1 solution combining data protection for backups, replicas, and more under one reliable solution. Eliminate data loss and ransomware with Veeam Backup and Replication V11 with a free unlimited 30-day trial. Just go to vee.am/twit and find out why Veeam is simple, flexible, and reliable.
Welcome to Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, your weekly dose of the latest, the best, the most important in all the news for enterprise technology. I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, and you'll notice, if you're a regular viewer, that I am not Lou Maresca. He's off on special assignment this week, but he'll be back with us again next week. We've got a great show for you. We're going to be talking about managing computers, but not just any computers. Talk about how you go about managing Macs in the enterprise. But before we do that, of course, we have the blips, we have the bytes. And for all of those, I need my co-host just down the street here in the Sunshine State, Mr. Brian Chi. Brian, how are things way down south where you are?
Life is actually pretty good. I'm slowly unpacking boxes. And the best part is even though we have lots and lots of boxes to unpack, we're collapsing them down, stacking them up in the side, and people in the neighborhood, I've been posting them as free boxes to the next door, and people have been grabbing them because apparently it 'tis the season to move. But the best part is it's the ultimate in recycling, and I'm trying to be as green as possible.
Oh, we all appreciate that. And speaking of green, it's time to get in and use some of the news items that have come out this week with the blips. Plug-in code editors, well, they're not just a convenience. They're also a security threat. According to software security firm Sneak, vulnerabilities discovered in two plugins for Microsoft's popular Visual Studio Code Editor could allow an attacker to execute malware by tricking a developer into clicking a link. This raises concerns that code editor extensions could be used as a way to compromise development environments. The two extensions, Open in Default Browser and Instant Markdown, account for more than 600,000 downloads in the VS Code marketplace. That's respectable, but it's not close to the most popular plugins for handling code in popular languages like Python and C, each of which has tens of millions of downloads. The question, say researchers, is whether Microsoft's Visual Studio Code, GitHub's Atom, and other extensible code editors have had enough security assessments. Extensible code editors have taken off over the last decade, with Microsoft's focus on supporting a wide variety of programming languages and frameworks, making its Visual Studio Code incredibly popular, currently with more than 11 million users. Microsoft stated that overall, 51% of developers are using the Claude platform. Another 23% use Sublime Text. 13% use GitHub's Atom. That's according to the 2019 Stack Overflow survey. Attackers' interest is understandable, since the software supply chain allows compromises to be leveraged to attack bigger game. Earlier this month, for example, vulnerability management firm Rapid7 became the latest company to have its developers targeted when attackers accessed the company's code repositories. Keeping the ecosystem secure requires more security checks and a better way to communicate to users the degree to which editor plugins have been checked. At the very least, the developers who publish and maintain extensions for any platform, whether VS Code or an open source framework, should use modern security tools to check the security of the code.
Well, Amazon's most favored nation clauses get slammed in a lawsuit filed in Washington, D.C. The District of Columbia sued Amazon this last Tuesday, alleging that the online retail giant violated antitrust law with policies that prevent sellers from offering products at lower prices on other websites. Quote, Amazon fixed online retail prices through contract provisions and policies, unquote, that prevent third-party sellers that offer products on Amazon.com from offering their products at lower prices or on better terms on any other online platform, including their own website, according to Attorney General Carl Racine's office in an announcement on the lawsuit. The complaint was filed in the District of Columbia Superior Court. Amazon's most favored nation agreements effectively require third-party sellers to incorporate the high fees charged by Amazon, as much as 40% of the total product price, not only into the price charged to customers on Amazon's platform, but also on any other online retail platform, according to Racine's announcement. As a result, these agreements impose an artificially high price floor across the online retail marketplace and allow Amazon to build and maintain monopoly power in violation of the District of Columbia's Antitrust Act. The lawsuit asks for a judgment stating that Amazon's action constitute unreasonable and unlawful restraints of trade and that Amazon acted unlawfully to maintain or attempt to achieve a monopoly in the online retail sales market in the United States. The complaint seeks an injunction prohibiting Amazon from continuing the allegedly anti-competitive practices described in the lawsuit, along with civil penalties, attorney fees, and restitution and damages for harmed consumers. I think the key here is that Amazon's agreement pushes vendors to price their products on other outlets, even their own websites, the same as the price on Amazon, which includes the extra overhead of Amazon fees, which in my dictionary is a definition of price fixing.
Well, modern socks are a painful challenge amid growing complexity. The complexity in managing security operations centers, or SOCs, has spiked, according to survey data. In its second annual study on the economics of security operations centers, the Poneman Institute found 81% of companies considered managing a SOC to be highly complex. The survey of 682 SOC managers, security analysts, general security practitioners, IT managers, and directors who have a SOC in their organizations also revealed that the ROI of SOC investments is decreasing, with more than half of respondents saying the ROI of the SOC is getting worse. That's compared to only 44% who saw the ROI going down in 2019. Working in the SOC is stressful. 85% of respondents report their work is painful or very painful. Despite the challenges, 80% of organizations feel their SOC is essential or very important, and that's compared to 73% who felt that way in 2019. The Dark Reading Report, Building the SOC of the Future, examines the forces of change that are influencing the activities in today's SOCs, as well as which tools and technology security leaders are investing in to address an evolving threat management. If you are involved in managing a SOC, or if you fear you might become one, you might want to check out that report. At the very least, it'll give you something new to worry about.
Well, Florida, my new home, is trying to make it illegal for Facebook and Twitter to ban politicians. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis yesterday signed a bill into law to stop what he called the censorship of conservatives on social media websites such as Twitter and Facebook. The law is likely to be challenged in court and has been described as blatantly unconstitutional by legal experts and advocacy groups across the political spectrum. But Florida's governor and legislature were undeterred by the possibility that courts will strike down the law as violating the First Amendment. The law gives Floridians the right to sue big tech companies over content moderation decisions and prohibits the companies from deplatforming political candidates and journalistic enterprises. It is scheduled to take effect on July 1st. Well, Governor DeSantis is crying censorship and comparing the banning of politicians from social media to that of communist Cuba, while not saying that he's trying to take away the business's right to provide service to whomever they want, while putting in a huge loophole for the media outlets that also own theme parks in the state. So this is one Florida man that would rather the governor read up on constitutional law before he wastes taxpayers' funding just to be a mouthpiece for a sore loser.
Well, the Have I Been Pwned code base is now open source. Have I Been Pwned, or HIBP, the free website used by millions to check whether their credentials have been compromised, has open sourced its code base. According to an announcement Troy Hunt, the founder of Have I Been Pwned, made this week. Hunt first mentioned plans to open source the HIBP code base last summer. Now, as requests for the website's pwned passwords approach a billion per month, yes, that's 1 billion with a B per month, he has confirmed it's officially open source via the .NET Foundation, an independent 501c nonprofit organization. There are a few reasons pwned passwords works well for the open source model, which is why he decided to start there, he wrote in a blog post. For starters, pwned passwords has a simple code base consisting of Azure storage, a single Azure function, and a Cloudflare worker. It also has its own domain, Cloudflare account, and Azure services, so it can be picked up and open sourced independently of the rest of HIBP. Further, he added, it's non-commercial with no API costs or enterprise services like other parts of HIBP. And finally, the data driving pwned passwords is already freely available in the public domain through the downloadable hash sets. Hunt also announced that HIBP will receive compromised passwords discovered as part of FBI investigations. The website will provide officials with a way to feed the passwords into HIBP and surface them via the pwned passwords tool, he explained. Now, all of these changes ensure that anyone can run their own pwned passwords instance if they want to. Hunt says he hopes this will encourage adoption of the service. Well, that's it for the blips. We have more news coming up, and as always, a fabulous guest waiting in the wings. But before we get to them, it's time to let our noble leader, Lou, tell us about a sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech.
Thank you, guys. I'll get back to your enterprise and IT goodness in just a moment. But before we do have to thank a great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that is Bitwarden. Now, what is the easiest way for businesses and individuals to store, share, and sync sensitive data? Well, of course, Bitwarden. It really is a great tool, and it's open source. Now, Bitwarden is the only open source cross-platform password manager that can be used at home, on the go, or at work, and is trusted by millions of individuals, teams, and organizations worldwide. Now, businesses need to empower their employees, right? Well, they need to be able to follow a password manager's best practices. But by giving your employees Bitwarden, they can securely store credentials across personal and business worlds. Every Bitwarden account begins with the creation of a personal vault. Your control of the vault is at all times. Use Bitwarden for your business. When an individual joins a team or a company, they can assign and be assigned to an organizational vault for access to shared credentials. Quicker access means quicker productivity. It's fully customizable, meaning it adjusts features using enterprise policies to adapt your business needs. Bitwarden also just released a few new features, including Bitwarden Send, a fully encrypted method to transmit sensitive information, whether text or file, directly to anyone. Team members can generate unique and secure passwords for every site and ensure passwords are not used more than once. You'll minimize that risk of using weak and vulnerable passwords as well. You'll get enterprise-grade security. Bitwarden conducts third-party security audits and is compliant with major privacy and security standards, including GDPR, CCPA, HIPAA, and SOC 2. Unite your existing systems with Bitwarden using SSO authentication, directory services, or powerful APIs and fully featured command line interfaces. Their end-to-end encrypted vault helps mitigate phishing attacks by storing passwords and more. Now, are you interested in a business plan? Well, Bitwarden has plans for all sizes. Now, their team's organization option is $3 a month per user, where you can share private data securely with your coworkers, department, or an entire organization. Now, this plan also has full management of user groups. Now, for enterprises, use Bitwarden's enterprise organization plan for just $5 a month per user. Store business secrets securely and enable enterprise policies, SSO authentication, and an option to actually self-host as well. Want to learn how Bitwarden organizations work? Well, check out their free organization plan. It includes two users who can store and share secure passwords. Bitwarden believes that everyone should have access to basic password security tools. Individuals can use their basic free account forever for an unlimited number of passwords across any number of devices, or upgrade anytime to their premium account for less than $1 a month, giving you premium password security and management features. And if you're looking for secure password storage for your entire family, their family organization option gives up to 6 users premium features for only $3.33 a month. Using the Bitwarden Cloud, you can get started in no time, or self-host if preferred. Monitor and manage security vulnerabilities using the Bitwarden Vault Health Reports. Identify exposed, reused, weak, or potentially compromised passwords, as well as any items in your vault with inactive 2FA. Get started with a free Teams or Enterprise trial of a Teams or Enterprise plan at bitwarden.com/twit, or try it for free across devices as an individual user. That's bitwarden.com/twit. And we thank Bitwarden for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Now back to you guys.
Thanks, Lou. We appreciate that. Now get back out there on assignment. We need to hear from you again. Well, now it's time for the Bites, and we begin this week with a heartwarming story about how the smallest of vulnerabilities can have some mighty big impacts on security. Brian, what's up with that?
Well, when we start talking about network security, system security, and so forth, there's been a big assumption. The assumption has been that the hackers are going to go after the most vulnerable, the biggest vulnerabilities, the ones that have the highest risk, the 9.8s out of 10, and so, well, maybe not. According to this article from Dark Reading, people are starting to see that the script is being flipped. They're no longer going for the really high vulnerabilities, the big risks. They're going for the little ones. Now, one of the points that they're making in the article is that the key point is that low severity doesn't mean low risk. Properly exploited low-severity vulnerabilities are bringing enterprises to their knees. For example, a single financial institution reported over 267,322 attacks in a 24-hour period, an overwhelming number by any measure, but since financial organizations have relatively small teams, prioritizing threats is critical. Unfortunately, shifting through vulnerabilities to select ones require immediate remediations, like finding needles in a haystack. Well, it's a great article. Strongly suggest you read it. But what we're going to do is we're going to go and take a look at some of the things that are happening behind the scenes. Like, for instance, we're going to have a great conversation with our guest about some tools. See, the issue is the vulnerabilities are there, and a lot of times they can be patched. But how do you do that? How do you have a big enough team to go to every single machine to patch and so forth? How the heck are we going to be able to afford this? Now, another option is, well, the FBI has been stepping in to patch vulnerable servers. Is it time for a governmental agency to help out? You know, I'm going to go and talk to Kurt for a second. What are you starting to hear in the halls of money in the C-suites and so forth? How are people allocating resources in today's security world?
Well, the interesting thing is that people are, in fact, allocating more resources to security. That's the, sort of the good news. The bad news is that the people that we talk to often say that in the most optimistic case, they still can't afford all of the security experts they would like. Now, the industry is responding to this in a number of ways, but two of the big ones are the rise of MSSPs, that's managed security service providers, and an increased trust and reliance on automation. Those work in tandem. The MSSPs, basically you're hiring a team of security professionals on a basis of being there when you need it. Depending on the size of the organization that you're in, it can either be someone who manages all your security, or it can be, for example, forensics experts who come in and provide forensics as a service when you've been breached. The reliance on automation is often to do two things. The first is to weed out the noise. You know, Brian just spoke about a huge number of attacks that a particular institution saw. And the fact is that not all of those are equal severity. Some of those are attacks that could take down the business. Some of those are attacks that could be an annoyance. Automation can help take care of the annoyance attacks, leaving the human beings to deal with those that are true catastrophes. The other thing that the automation can do is provide a backstop. And where you see this often is in things like DDoS attacks, where you have a potential denial of service attack going on. You'll have an automated response where as soon as it sees certain patterns in traffic, it goes ahead and does what's usually an authorized man-in-the-middle attack and shunts all of the attacking packets off into a bit bucket somewhere. So those were the two big ways, and all of this is moving higher and higher in the organization as security becomes a C-suite and board-level issue. Now, Brian, I know that you have talked to people at very high levels of organizations. Do you think that moving this up the organization level is having a good impact on how it's being dealt with?
Well, I would hope so. One of the observations I've made over the years is that our workforce is aging. We're going to get our younger, more tech-savvy workers rolling in the door, and old farts like me are going to be walking out the door and retiring. Now, doesn't sound like that's a really big issue, but when you have kids that are or new employees, let's call them that, coming in the door that are dramatically more tech savvy, I foresee that we're going to maybe start seeing less of an effectiveness of phishing attacks. Now, one of the things that a conversation I also had relatively recently was, gee, I wish we had the same kind of securities we had on our old mainframes, you know, having everything centralized. Because one of the big complaints is when we have so many people working from home or working remotely, our attack surfaces spread all over creation. But I start bringing up the concept of, gee, there was a concept called VDI, virtual desktop infrastructure, where instead of having a full desktop or even a partial desktop out at the edge, it's all running in a data center. So we have the advantages of things like everything in the data center, so I can apply better controls, better scanning and things like that. We actually interviewed two companies, Awingu and Ericom, that are dramatically lower cost VDI solutions that don't have to push you in, you know, to robbing a bank like, you know, someone that starts with a C. And of course, lots and lots of our stuff is going into software as a service. So the guys at both Awingu and Ericom both have basically hardened browsers. So here's my question for you, Kurt. You and I both wrote a couple of books on cloud computing. We never really went to do the third book on VDI because we both thought the market had kind of died. But what do you think? You think maybe the pandemic and the change in the way we're doing our computing out at the edge, you think maybe it's going to bring VDI back?
Well, you'd like to think that it might, but I'm not sure that it will. And there are a lot of reasons for that. Tell you what I do think could bring VDI back. It's sort of a related thing, and that is the continuing use of things like smartphones, especially the larger format smartphones, and tablets. Because VDI comes very close to being able to give the user a reasonable desktop level experience with, let's be honest, desktop software on their tablet or mobile device. I think what we may end up looking at as much as VDI, and here let me say, I think that VDI is an outstanding answer for a lot of situations. You see it frequently in places like healthcare, where the doctors and health staffers move from room to room, log in to a VDI session on the local system rather than carrying a laptop with them. And I think that for things like that, it should work. And frankly, it should be working for a lot more enterprises, if for no other reason than all of the neighborhood internet connections that are at this point bandwidth constrained, because the last year blew up all of the projections that the providers had made about what kind of bandwidth they would need. It enables them to have reasonable access. I wonder, though, whether what we're going to see, instead of moving to a technology answer, is a response that requires a change in the expectation and way we work. You know, are we going to move to a situation where we're back to some things that we did decades ago, which was essentially get a file locally, probably into a sandbox or some sort of protected container, and then work on it, upload it to a central repository, and delete the data on the local system? I have a feeling that could be something that we look at, but this is certainly a mess, no matter how you look at it. Brian, what do you think? Is the answer finally going to be technological, or are we looking at key differences to the basic way that we work?
I think the answer is going to be something that's probably going to surprise us. I'm not sure it's going to be all technology. I'm not sure it's going to be all policy. I think a lot of it's going to be education. But you know what? I think our guest is going to be able to go and chime in on this, because one of the things that has come up is we've been, as an industry, relatively lax about the whole concept of BYOD, bring your own device. That's a heck of an attack surface. Now, we need the ability to be able to go in there and make sure they're patched, make sure they're updated, make sure the virus antivirus and anti-malware signatures are actually up to date. And we need that very quickly. Now, whether VDI or whatever's becomes a viable solution again, that's yet to be seen. But you know what? I think what we probably want to do is go and hit our next sponsor and hear from, let Lou do that. And then what we'll do is let's go talk about it with our guest, because I'll just bet you he's sitting there wringing his hands saying, I want to say something. I want to say something. And, you know, there we go. So in this case, Lou, I think what we need to do is we need to go and pay the bills. And then let's go back and talk to our guest.
Well, thank you, guys. I'll get you back to your IT goodness in just a second. But before we do, we do have to thank another great sponsor of this week in Enterprise Tech, and that is Audible. What an amazing and fun tool Audible is. Have you ever wanted to just read a memoir and just didn't have the time? Or maybe you found a title you couldn't put down, but you also needed to fold laundry? Well, now you can do both, because Audible makes it possible. When you're driving, exercising, cooking, cleaning your house, or just relaxing, you can listen to amazing audio files with Audible. Now, Audible is the leading provider of spoken word entertainment all in one place. At Audible, you can find the largest selections of audiobooks, ranging from bestsellers and new releases to celebrity memoirs, languages, business, motivation, and more. Get original entertainment from top celebrity creators and thousands of popular and binge-worthy podcasts. They are now offering their newest plan, Audible Plus. Now, Audible Plus gives you full access to their popular Plus catalog. The Audible Plus is all about giving members a chance to listen to and discover new favorites and explore different formats, like the exclusive Words Plus music series or a podcast you've never considered before, even theatrical performances. You can listen to all you want to thousands and thousands of popular audiobooks and original entertainment and podcasts, including ad-free versions of your favorite shows and exclusive series. They're all available to download or stream, so you can listen anywhere, anytime, on any device, and you'll never lose your spot. To use your Audible membership, you'll need to download the Audible app. Now, the Audible app is free and can be installed on all smartphones and tablets. Listening to Audible will make you feel inspired and connected, and it's available all in one app. Audible Plus, it's your playlist for life. What are you waiting for? Delve into your next title on Audible with Audible Plus. New members can try Audible Plus for 30 days. Download the Audible app and get started with a free trial at audible.com/Twiat or text Twiat to 500-500. That's audible.com/Twiat or text Twiat to 500-500 to start your free trial today. And we thank Audible for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Back to you guys.
Thanks, Lou. We appreciate you taking care of the ads for us, and we'll look forward to hearing from you again. But now it's time to talk to our guest. Now, one of the big topics, especially in the last year or so, is remote monitoring and management, basically how to keep track of all your users wherever they may be. And our guest today is the co-founder of a company that does just that. We have with us Jason Detbarn, who is founder and CEO of Adigy, a company that does RMM specifically for a particular class of hardware. Jason, welcome to Twiat.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. And before we get into what's important about RMM and the particular take that your company has on RMM, we love to hear our guests talk about the long and winding road that led them to being right where they are. What path did you take to becoming CEO of Adigy?
Well, out of school, I focused on engineering. Like you guys, I studied computer science, and I went to embedded software engineering. So my first job out of school was working at Motorola, and I date myself in my own company because I worked on the first GPS-enabled phone, the first Java-enabled phone, and then I did marine electronics, so GPS technology for boats. And while I loved the work I did as an engineer, I had a real passion for business. So I had a fork in the road. How do I want to, you know, really learn business? And it was either going to get an MBA or diving into the deep end of the pool in sales. So I chose the field MBA, and I joined a company called CA, Computer Associates in New York, and jumped right into enterprise software. So I was stationed out in San Francisco working for them, and saw the shift in the market space, the disruption of IT in the enterprise, and the upswell of managed service providers, and joined Kaseya. I joined Kaseya when they were smaller than Adagy is today, and really built my career there in many different areas of the business, but inevitably decided to leave 8 years plus in. And the itching issue was, you look at the Windows-based device market, the Windows-based management market, and there's a ton of vendors out there. And Apple was an area of the market that no vendors were really focusing on. And when I started Adagy, second child in the way, bootstrapping the business, people used to say to me, how many Apple devices really are there in business? It was just one of these niche-seeming areas. But there was Apple devices everywhere in the C-suite, in all over organizations. And like you guys were mentioning earlier, it was very BYOD at the time. But the company has grown quite substantially since then. And here we are today. That's kind of my roots of the business.
Very good. Well, now I'm curious, because fleet management is one of the terms that's used in the industry for managing all of the systems that you have out there on desktops and, frankly, in users' hands. Why did you decide that Apple products, Macs, were the way to go? Because traditionally, Macs have been a relatively small part of the overall enterprise picture.
Correct, correct. But the demand and the need was really there. These were untapped Unix-like systems that would allow us to do anything and everything for these devices. And one of the problems is not just the fact that, you know, definitely there wasn't a tremendous amount of Apple devices in the enterprise. That has changed quite considerably today. But at the time, I think there was a lot of reasons why these devices weren't adopted so thoroughly. One of them is we live in a user-based environment. Active Directory is the center of most organizations, obviously Azure AD today, Okta, Google as an IDP. And it's really about the identity of the users that has been so lacking on the Apple side of the house. And they've gotten better in their lane of building better and better hardware, in my opinion. And we're seeing that adoption rate just grow substantially. But still the need is, those can't be bring your own device. They can't be unmanaged devices. And even recent news shows that security wise, they're not bulletproof by any means. With more devices means more opportunity for attack surface. So they need to be managed more than ever before. And enterprises are just seeing tremendous demand.
Well, now, one of the things that I'm curious about with you focusing on the Apple products, how different is it to do remote management and monitoring for Apple products than it would be for Windows products? I mean, it seems like from a market building perspective, the obvious answer would be to try to monitor and manage just as much of an enterprise's fleet as possible. Are the two really that different when it comes to managing them?
You know, at the end of the day, the devices are different themselves, but we've built a platform here at Adagy that is very universal in network administrators, Windows-based administrators, to be able to deliver the same level of need that they have in hopefully a simpler, easier-to-use manner. So, no, I completely agree with you, but because those tools weren't there, they were the island of Apple admins that had unique ways of hopefully managing them. There was just the lack of ecosystem to support them. So the CISO, the CIO and IT teams have pushed back on Apple devices in such a huge way for so many years that once tools became available, once demand continued to increase, we see the adoption rate. So a lot of our enterprises, when they do bring in Adagy specifically, we see the Apple adoption rate grow very quickly, usually 100% or more. We're seeing some of the largest enterprises in the market right now seeing massive shifts in demand just because of Apple Silicon. So being able to have devices that are not having to be charged for a week, obviously off and on as they use them as portable devices. But that's the thing that we're definitely excited about, is providing better security, a better experience for our end users that use Apple devices and meeting those demands.
Well, when you talk about the Apple devices, you know, one of the things that's important there, we've seen a marked difference in the popularity of macOS devices in the enterprise versus iOS devices and now iPadOS devices and all the rest. Are you managing all of those devices, or are you focusing specifically on the macOS side of things?
Yeah, the timeline is interesting. So when we started Adagy, the only way you could manage a Mac is by having an always-on agent installed on the machine, and that was your portal to talk to, orchestrate things on the device, on the Mac itself. And that's the workhorse of organizations. But mobile devices were starting to be the API for the MDM spec was being added to the Mac by Apple. So that gave us an added capability and really a requirement to do some of the same things that we do for managing iPhones and iPads on the Mac. But at the end of the day, you need both. You need to orchestrate these capabilities that you can tap on the OS itself and mobile device management. So I think one of the challenges for a lot of the people in the market right now is they see the need to manage Macs with MDM, mobile device management. If they use tools that were designed to manage iPhones and iPads natively, they're not going to meet their Mac requirements that they have. That's a real enterprise requirement that goes beyond just configuring a phone and an iPad. So we focus really on the workhorse devices in the organizations, the Macs, but we have a tremendous amount of iPhones and iPads because we do support the full MDM spec. We even have patents on MDM that allow us to manage them in real time, peer-to-peer natively without going through Apple's network. So the answer is we focus on the workhorse devices in the organization with the enterprise requirements, but we do have the extended capability for iPhones and iPads.
Well, you know, I want to jump in a little bit. I've done a lot of work internationally, and interesting enough, especially in Asia, the macOS world is actually a little stronger because traditionally Apple's been stronger at supporting other languages, you know, especially double byte character sets like Mandarin and Japanese. So is your support group, is your sales actually reflecting that also?
We have a very international set of customers globally. Japan is actually one of Apple's largest geographies of sales, actually. But they do tend to focus on high GDP markets still. These are premium assets that organizations opt into. So it definitely is aligned to, you know, UK and EMEA, APAC regions like Australia, New Zealand, and then Japan is obviously an outlier. China is an interesting one. I mean, it's just a vast market overall, but we have some clients over there too.
Okay. Well, Kurt and I are both Mac users. I happen to use Fusion. Now, I've had a lot of people talk about Fusion in the enterprise, but one of the big frustrations is how the heck do we apply policies to the hypervisor? Have you guys managed to figure that one out?
I mean, there's ways to do that where on the hypervisor itself, you can apply some configurations to do that. And that has to be done at the OS level. That can't be done with MDM. So because these are Unix systems, we can lay down plists and other things like that. And, that's the other aspect that I think is really helpful and important. Our market, we do a lot of training for the industry. Apple doesn't necessarily go out there and say, this is how to do it. So it's kind of our job to educate the market on how to do things on Apple, untap that capability, whether it's with our devices or just the ecosystem itself. So we do a lot of training in the market, and untapping what we can do on the Mac is going onto the OS and running any scripts we want to run. We're the only real-time system that can do all of those. So if there's an issue on a machine, we can detect those, remediate the problem, all real-time without having to go through MDM. MDM, for most people to know, is just configuring the device at the very simple foundational level. Enterprises really need to go to another degree for security purposes, for providing the best experience for their end users. But hypervisors are interesting. We're going to see, I mean, right now there's claims that the Apple M1 chip emulating Windows is faster than Intel running natively. So, you know, it's a whole new world.
Well, we've got a lot more to talk about. We're just getting started with Jason of Adigy. But before we continue, we need to hear from Lou, coming to us from an undisclosed location and talking about another sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech.
Well, thank you, guys. I will get you back to your enterprise and IT news in just a second. But first, we have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that is Veeam. Veeam is the leader in backup solutions that deliver cloud data management through a single platform. Modernize backup, accelerate hybrid cloud, and secure your data with Veeam solutions. They are simple to install, run, are flexible enough to fit into any environment, and are always reliable. Now, the new Veeam Backup and Replication V11 eliminates data loss and ransomware while helping you save 20 times on your long-term archive retention costs. The 4-in-1 solution combines backup, replication, storage snapshots, and now continuous data protection under a single platform, delivering faster and more flexible data protection, as well as recovery and retention options. Now, V11 unlocks unprecedented resiliency for any size business, offering over 200 new features and enhancements. Now, here are some of the top ones. Data stays safe, ransomware stays out. Now, Veeam V11 helps you secure and recover your backup data with confidence for its entire life cycle. Now, 95% of Veeam customers experience little to no financial impact at all due to ransomware attacks. Stop ransomware in its tracks and safeguard your recoverability with native immutability for your backups. Deliver confidence to your organization while improving recovery-related operations by automatically testing and scanning every backup for malware. You also get continuous data protection. Solving the problem of meeting both internal and external SLAs is often expensive for IT leaders. You know that. The cost of technology and its complexity often requires personal training and time to build proficiency. Veeam helps eliminate downtime and minimizes data loss for your Tier 1 VMware workloads. With its built-in CDP, you'll achieve immediate recoveries to the latest state or desired point in time. 20 times less cost for long-term retention and immutability. Large portions of data require management across performance, capacity, and archive storage. Veeam offers intelligent data lifecycle management for backup copies. It reduces the cost of long-term data archival and retention and achieve end-to-end backup lifecycle management with Veeam capacity and archive tiers that offer automated data movement to object storage with native support for Amazon S3 Glacier and Azure Blob. With over 400,000 customers worldwide, including Puma, Welch's, and Deloitte, Veeam was named a leader in the 2020 Gartner Magic Quadrant for the fourth time for providing backup that goes beyond legacy platforms to provide reliable backup, monitoring, analytics, automation, and orchestration. Eliminate data loss and ransomware with Veeam Backup and Replication V11 with a free unlimited 30-day trial. Just go to vee.am/twit and find out why Veeam is simple, flexible, and reliable. That's vee.am/twit. And we thank Veeam for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Now back to you guys.
Okay, let's get down. Let's flip the conversation just a little bit. So far, we've been talking about pushing policies, pushing updates, and things like that. Let's talk about the pull side. How does your product handle making sure that oh, God forbid, we're going through an airport. We've got some people that are being really silly about policies, and you have to wipe your machine. Does Adigy have ways built in to help, you know, make sure that obviously beforehand things were backed up so that we can minimize the risk of having to wipe a machine as we go through hostile territory?
Yeah, it's a really good point, especially over the last year when people work remotely, you just don't have an option to go out there and grab the machine, right? So Adigy is a way where we can wipe the device, fully wipe the device, or lock the device as well with a PIN code that's escrowed and stored. So you can lock that device and ensure that the unlock it when the person is capable of properly being in front of that machine. And then when it reboots after that wipe, it goes through a process from Apple called automated device enrollment. It's something that when you as a company buy new Apple devices, they automatically get enrolled in Apple Business Manager, and that will auto install Adigy and auto configure that device out of the box. So we see a big demand where, look, we're not going to have to go in here and troubleshoot like crazy about everything. If we know what the problems, if we know there's a problem there, let's just wipe the device and let it rebuild all the recipes and configurations we need to do its job. And that's what happens. You wipe and rebuild the machine and it works out of the box. So yeah, it's a key feature for Apple devices. Windows is doing that now with Autopilot in a big way. But that's one area that Apple has been doing a great job at. What's key for Adigy is that we take the user right to their IDP login. With Apple, you're just creating a local user account, and really they're focused on the consumer user behind that device. It's not really enterprise focused as how that user is tied into their organization. We provide that right when they pull it out of the shrink wrap of the box or when they wipe the machine. It takes you right to that login window, make sure that the right user is logging onto that machine, and via their department, configure what they need on that machine. Without that, it's interesting to know you can take a serial number off of any device, put it in your hypervisor there, Brian, and actually emulate a device getting fully configured of an organization. It's like a social security number. It's a login and password all in one. So it's very, very important for enterprises to be able to have that security with the right users log on to those machines before putting certificates and everything else on the machine.
Cool. I want to stretch a little bit. You know, you're talking about enterprise devices. I've been going to a lot of places where they've got some Mac people and there's an Apple TV because they want to be able to go and send their screen, screencast it up. Don't suppose Adigy has a way to go and start putting policies on the Apple TVs?
Same thing there. Now, the thing that has to be done is those devices have to be purchased under your Apple account as an enterprise. That'll be an Apple Business Manager as well. And so out of the box, you plug it into a network, likely a guest network, and then that will configure your Wi-Fi cert, everything else you need on the Apple TV as well. So they're trying to unify MDM as that foundational component for all Apple devices, for iPhones, iPads, Apple TV, and the Mac. And you're right. We see the Apple TV in most conference rooms just because of the simplicity of throwing that on the screen, especially for, majority Apple organizations.
Well, you're talking about majority Apple organizations, and here's one of the questions I have. You've got these majority Mac organizations that are typically and traditionally smaller. So is Adigy a system that will allow a smaller organization to take a step toward actually managing all their devices rather than just hoping that everything's going to work out like they want it to?
Yeah, absolutely. Out of the box, we can help small organizations do that. But what we do find on the small organization side, most of them a lot of times should be working with a IT managed service provider. So at the pure SMB level, that's almost half our business is managed service providers that use our tool to scale their operations on Mac. And then up the chain, you'd be surprised the size of organizations are out there, especially tech-based organizations, Looker, Bamboo HR, let's go on and on and on, that are full Apple organizations, and they use our software to fully manage those environments. Then you step it up beyond that, and even if it's not hundreds of thousands of devices, most true enterprises own a bunch of different subsidiaries. And so we're the only multi-tenant MDM platform in the market where we can add in multiple IDP providers, Google, Azure AD, et cetera, multiple MDM, Apple Business Manager accounts, and manage them all under one roof. We have some companies that have 40 different entities, and we're the only way for them to not have to have 40 different accounts to do their job. So they can centralize a patch that they need to get out, you know, a really important security patch that needs to patch that zero-day vulnerability, and then do that top-down for all their companies and subsidiaries. Really that simple, as easy as I'm explaining that. But then allow those organizations to manage their own devices above that. That's been the key mantra. That's why our architecture works for those IT companies, because they're managing multiple different SMBs, as well as the large enterprises that have many different companies, which a lot of times almost seem like a managed service provider in and of themselves because they have so many companies underneath their enterprise belt. So that's and Apple doesn't move those. You can't, just because they bought another company, they won't move those accounts. Whatever's been seeded there stays there as of now. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Jason, since you brought it up, I've got to ask a follow-up question on multi-tenancy. Can you talk to me about how well you insulate one customer from another in a multi-tenancy situation? You know, we've had over the last 5 years a number of very high-profile security issues that came about and allowed a compromise of one tenant, basically, to provide for lateral spread to other tenants. Is that something that people need to worry about with Adigy?
They don't have to worry about it with us, but I think that is something that you bring up that is very, very important. Most of the IT companies that are out there, they really started with on-premise platforms. And so everything in that system was, you know, one organization itself. When they move to cloud and they try to build cloud-based architecture, you know, forcing that into multi-tenancy is not easy. I've seen a few organizations firsthand get it wrong. It has to be built from the ground up with that security, with the right architecture. And I think that's a really important question you lay out. The security beyond that, with pen testing, with outside security assessments, with code review of different areas, it's a very important piece. But being cloud-based from the very beginning, that public exposure, that scrutiny in security of having all of your customers in one cloud infrastructure is so important. And I couldn't go back, because the security through obscurity in an on-premise model or that level of architecture is, to me, just a much, much bigger risk. You have to get it right from the beginning. You have to address it very completely.
I love to hear people say that they don't trust security through obscurity. That's one of my favorite topics. And we've had a bunch of great topics here, but unfortunately, we have not managed to stretch an hour to be more than 60 minutes. So we're coming down to the end of our time. And I want to give you the chance to tell people how they can get more information about Adigy, where they can find out whether Adigy is a solution that will work for them.
Yeah, it's simple. If you come to our website, adigy.com, we've got a lot of resources there to take a look at or see a live demo from our team, as well as actually get your hands on a trial account, free, easy-to-use trial account, and just test out the nuts and bolts of it. Our goal is really to make sure that you can provide the best experience for your end users and really secure them to the highest level required. And as this is going to continue, we're going to see a lot more Apple devices in the coming years in organizations. We have to really secure them, or they're going to be the big attack vector in an organization.
Well, Jason, thank you so much. Our guest today has been Jason Dettbarn, founder and CEO of Adigy. Jason, we appreciate you being with us and hope that you have a great holiday weekend down even further south in the Sunshine State.
Curtis, Brian, thank you so much. It was great meeting you guys, and love everything you're doing. Thank you very much.
We thank Jason, and we thank you for being here with us. We say it pretty much every week. We couldn't and probably wouldn't do this show if it weren't for you, the viewer or listener. We do this every week live at this time, but we also are available on all kinds of great podcasting platforms. Before I tell you a little bit more about them, I want to thank my co-host and our producer, Mr. Brian Chee. Brian, what do you have coming up for the next week?
Well, you know, one of the things is I'm starting to get more into this Club Twit thing. You know, I'm trying to be in it during the show, and I'm trying to answer questions that people throw at me during the week. It's been fun. But anyway, you know, I can also be grabbed on Twitter. I'm ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab. And you can see some of the weirdness that I do. I'm probably going to start posting more about some of the IoT gear that I'm going to be putting together. I promised Kurt that I'd build him a waterproof solar-powered IoT device to do air temperature, humidity, and water temperature so he knows when he can go and take a dip. But, you know, we love to hear show ideas from you. And I'm Cheebert at twit.tv, so feel free to drop me a line. Or twit at twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. We love your ideas. We love your comments. I have very thick skin, so feel free if you don't like it. You know, I can always tell you tough. But we like hearing from you. And look forward to seeing you next week.
Thanks, Brian. And when it comes to hearing from you, we do enjoy it. But the reason that you can hear from us are the skills and efforts of our technical director, Mr. Ant Pruitt. Ant, in addition to being a wizard behind the switcher keyboard, you're also the host of a show here on the Twit Network. What's coming up in your world in the coming week?
Well, Mr. Curtis, thank you so much for your kind words. I got to sit down with a Canon Explorer of Light, Mr. Larry Chin, and he really did help me figure out a way to take better photographs of cars, because he is quite legendary. And as you see on the screen there, good grief, I can only aspire to be that good.
That does look amazing. Boy, howdy, I wish I could just get photographs of the puppies in the neighborhood to look that sharp and clear. I definitely have things to work on. Well, thank you for being here with us. As always, we appreciate you. Keep up with us on social media. Check out Club Twit. As Brian said, it's a thing that doesn't require a lot of dollars. It does give you a lot of access and a lot of feedback from not only the hosts, but the other members of Club Twit. So do check that out. And remember, as I said, we're here every week. We hope that you will be with us next week when we should have Lou Maresca in the host position again. Until then, remember, if you want to keep up with the very latest in enterprise technology, just keep quiet.
Hope you enjoyed that episode. If you would like to laugh while learning about how to take control and take advantage of all of the features that your iOS devices provide, then you should check out iOS Today. The show Rosemary Orchard, my co-host, and I, Micah Sargent, host every week on the Twit Network. It's all things Apple all the time.